Welcome to the Future Christian Podcast, your source for insights and ideas on how to lead your church into the 21st century. At the Future Christian Podcast, we talk to pastors, authors, and other faith leaders for helpful advice and practical wisdom to help you and your community of faith walk boldly into the future. Now, here's your host, Lauren Richmond Jr.
Welcome to the Future Christian Podcast. Today, we're welcoming Jessica Dominguez to the show. Jessica is a teacher, faith-led affordable housing development advisor and advocate. In 2019, Jessica took a leave from a 20-year career teaching public school to research affordable housing solutions and ended up helping to shape the city's housing priorities as a member of Denver's Housing Advisory Committee. During that time, she was named one of Denverites' Who's Next in Housing. She is a graduate of the Real Estate Diversity Initiative through Urban Land Institute and helped lead the Congregational Land Campaign of the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado. Currently, Jessica serves as the co-director of housing development at Mile High Ministries. In this role, she provides churches with education and technical assistance through the Abundant Ground Program, empowering them to transform underutilized land into affordable housing solutions. Additionally, Jessica is a co-owner of Love Thy Neighbor, a mission-driven real estate group dedicated to resisting displacement and fostering affordable housing opportunities. Her commitment to addressing housing challenges has made her a driving force in creating positive change within communities. Let's welcome Jessica to the show. Hey, welcome to the Future Christian Podcast. This is Lauren Richmond Jr., and I am here with Jessica Dominguez, recording live and in person after some pretty serious technological challenges. So, Jessica, thank you so much for hanging with me. We'll talk to you a little bit more about where we're at and why we're recording here and all that jazz. But before we get going, anything else you'd like our listeners to know about you?
Yeah, I guess something that wasn't in the bio is that I lead the Denver Classroom Teachers Association Affordable Housing Committee, and I helped start that a few years back when we were seeing the displacement of students and teachers in the community.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. I feel like that could be a good conversation right there in itself.
Totally. There's so much. Yeah. Schools are getting involved in the affordable housing conversation, so it's so exciting.
We're also here with, who's our third guest that won't be
this
speaking?
This is Honey.
Honey, this is unfortunately an audio podcast, so we may or may not hear Honey, but
she's
Jessica
such a good
and I
girl.
Can see her. Share a little bit about your faith journey, if you would, what that looks like in the past, what it looks like today.
Yeah, sure. I grew up in a charismatic environment, so there was a lot of emphasis on the dependency of God, the bigness of God, relying on God's spirit to empower you, to speak to you. And it was really experiential. Mm-hmm. And I still rely on that a lot today.
Yeah.
And I think the way it has changed is that I was kind of, it was a lot of fear-based stuff and very introspective and versus like, you know, out into the world. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of separation and just fear. And I don't see life that way anymore. It's more of wonder and awe in that God is in the city and God is in nature and God is in others. And I ask a lot more questions where before it was like really dogmatic and this is what you believe. And I'm not so, I have more questions now, but yet I feel closer to God than I ever have.
Cool. What are some spiritual practices, some spiritual disciplines that have been meaningful for you?
Yeah. I get really emotional when I'm in corporate worship.
Mm-hmm.
Or around taking communion. And I was thinking about that and I was wondering why. And I think it's just how symbolic, of course, communion is.
Yeah.
And that I'm able to focus on the greatness of God and his sacrifice for me. And and just as he said, remember me
yeah.
in this. More lately, it's around, I'm feeling deep connection to my work and how God is using me at work. Mm-hmm. And I just feel very missional in it. And I feel God leading me and guiding, well, us. When I say us, I mean my husband and I were kind of doing this work together mm-hmm. alongside Mile High Ministries. So I feel God in my work. Yeah. Another thing that I've been really just asking God for is to show me the preciousness of people.
Hmm.
Because when you're doing affordable housing work, it's difficult, right?
Yeah.
And you're relying so much on numbers and funding and trying to make things work. And sometimes you lose the face of people and that importance. So right. I've just been asking God to show me the preciousness of people and how he loves them and how he cares for them. And yeah, so I've just been digging into that a little bit.
Well, that's good because, yeah. I mean, we've talked about free recording and for our listeners here, like I myself work in affordable housing and I know how easy it is to kind of like get lost in like the grind.
Yes, the grind.
In the grind. I mean, that's obviously in any job, but yeah, that's so good. I wish, you know, I'd love to talk to you about for 20, 30 minutes about communion too, but that's not what the yeah. podcast is for today. So you mentioned kind of your work
mm-hmm.
tying into your ministry.
Yeah.
Just talk about how you got into the work
sure.
and the ministry or the company mm-hmm. that yeah. you're with today.
Yeah. So in 2018, I was teaching first graders and mm-hmm. I was reading a book and it was a science book and it was called Every Living Thing Has a Home. And I looked out into my audience of little first graders and there was a first grader there just looking back at me, eyes wide open, ready to learn science. And I knew she was living in the car with her family.
Wow.
And I began to God began to speak to my heart, not audibly, but the way he moves yeah. you in your spirit and just say, what are you going to do about this? Mm. And so my husband and I just started researching everything affordable housing related. And I felt like, I remember I think it was in August and I was getting ready, setting up my classroom. And I felt like I was supposed to take the year off
mm-hmm.
to research this.
Okay.
And I called up my husband and I said, I feel like God is asking me to do this, but I don't know. He said, you better make sure that's God. And so the funny thing is that my cousin, who's a pastor,
mm-hmm.
never calls me. Never. I think this was, and he called me that day.
Mm.
And he said, Jessica, you were just on my mind. And I want you to know that when God speaks to you, you should listen to him.
Wow.
And so for a 6 on the Enneagram who yeah. needs security, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was like kind of like propelling my faith a little bit.
Wow.
And so I also had another barrier though. We were getting ready to start school. And so I went to my principal and I said, listen, I know this is going to put you in a jam.
Right.
Because at that time I was in a leadership position. Also, I was coaching other teachers and I said, but I really feel like I'm supposed to take the year off to figure out this housing crisis that we're in. It was also teachers. And so took that year off, just began to connect with the affordable housing community. I don't know how this happened, but Denverite wrote an article, like who's next in housing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really doing anything, Lauren. I was just out there kind of like John the Baptist preaching, like who's doing anything about affordable housing?
The way of affordable housing.
Exactly. And so they wrote about me and I got connected through that article to a dear friend, Nathan Davis Hunt, who was leading the Congregation Land campaign at that time with Interfaith Alliance. And they were hiring a part-timer to help them with the churches. And so I did that for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
COVID hit. And being the 6 that I am on the Enneagram, needing that security,
yeah.
I went back to teaching. And during that time, my husband, we own a company called Love Thy Neighbor, and we were really focused on affordable for sale housing. And we worked with Habitat for a time and other nonprofits that were providing affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
for home ownership, which is different than market rate, right? And so he was doing that. I was teaching, still involved with the community, but not as deeply, right? Because I was teaching full time. Right. We decided about a year and a half ago that we thought, well, you know, is everything okay? Okay. I guess we felt a little discouraged. We were just talking about how do you know when to give up?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And things weren't going that well with the business, and I can teach anywhere. And we thought, well, maybe God's moving us to Kansas City. That's where my husband's from. Mm-hmm. And so we went out there for the summer and just saying, well, you know, it is affordable here. We can help people here. Right. Maybe we can take what we've learned.
Yeah.
You know, we knew a ton about deed restrictions, and we knew a little bit about development. We had gone through the READY program through ULI. And while we were out there, Jeff Johnson, my boss now and long-term mentor, called me and he said, hey, Jess, what do you think about starting up the Congregation Land Campaign again and helping churches? And I mm-hmm. said, well, I don't know. Let's explore the idea. And let's, you know, Nathan had moved to Boston. There was leadership changes at Interfaith. Okay. And we just began to, for the last year, kind of cultivate the relationships again and see who's doing what. And if there was really a need, right? And so we just had that webinar, which was so well attended. There were, I think, about 100 faith leaders that lined up and about 60 that actually attended. And so they need advisement. They need to know, you know, what their steps are. They also want to do that in a spiritual context. Mm-hmm. And how is the Lord calling them to use their property? How is the Lord calling them to steward their land? And so you can't really know that without really knowing your options as well. So, we've just been going at it. And at the same time, my role here is co-director of housing development. Mm-hmm. So I help a little bit with the development at Clara Brown Commons, where we are at now. And yeah, so that's how I'm here. Sorry, a lot in there.
No, that's great. Let's talk about Clara Brown Commons, where we're recording right now. Because mm-hmm. you know, you said something about the Lord working, and you told me a cool story behind it. I want our audience to hear that.
Yeah. So we're in the Cole neighborhood, Eastside Denver, and Jeff Johnson, our executive director at Mile High Ministries, lives in this neighborhood. And you know, for the last, I don't know, 20 years, this has been a blighted kind of area. And Jeff would frequently walk around this area and he would pray. And he would pray that the Lord would do something good with this land. And then he started praying, Lord, if you give me this land, I will do something good with it. Hmm. And it so happened that the person that owned the land, I guess, I don't want to say too much about it, but it ended up being for sale.
Right.
And somebody on city council called Jeff and said, hey, this land that you've been praying for 20 years is up for sale. And Jeff was like, well, I don't know how I'm going to buy it, but, you know, step one. And he had went to a Bible study soon after that. And one of his friends, just of wealthy means, asked him, hey, Jeff, what are you dreaming about? Hmm. And that actually provided kind of the down payment for us to get the land. Wow. And then it is a tax credit deal. And right. so there was some of that. And then we raised funds as well. So it wasn't like it was just God delivered it on a silver platter.
Yeah.
You know, it was a struggle to get here, but it was a beautiful struggle. And we just had our grand opening and celebrated. And it was just like a day-long celebration that ended in praise and worship and just gratitude.
I mean, I got to tour the building. It's amazing. It really is incredible just to see this. Mm-hmm. And as beautiful as this building is, as amazing as getting all the pieces to come together, I think, like, I want to emphasize the story of him praying mm-hmm. for 20 years. And maybe if anything, like, to emphasize, as I'm sure you'd agree, like, the importance of just committing prayer and discernment when it comes around anything, but especially building and land usage, right, for churches.
Right. Because it's one of our greatest assets that we have. And you just recently had Mark Elston on, and once it's gone, it's gone. And so, yeah, prayer and action as well, just to not even that you have to do something right away, but get the education, get a team of advisors around you who can help guide you and help answer your questions and help discern with you. Mm-hmm. And I find that it's layered, right? There's just different layers of discernment. And that involves technical questions that the church has, like, does the zoning allow for this? You know, how much do these buildings cost? What kind of partnerships do we want? How are these buildings paid for? And a good advisor will help you with all of that.
Yeah. So we've just been talking spiritual, and I do want to kind of get into the nitty gritty, because obviously, as much as I think it's important to pray and to share around these things, like, if anything, like, I want to learn from you. Yeah. So our audience can be along for the ride here.
Yeah.
So, just like, let's talk about, like, I'm thinking of a church up in the neck of the woods where I live, right?
Mm-hmm.
Been around since, I think, the 80s, have a big, huge, like, plot of land behind them.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just imagine, right?
Mm-hmm.
That this church comes to you. It's like, hey, we'd love to develop this land mm-hmm. for some kind of affordable housing. What are, like, the first questions or steps that you're giving them?
Well, the first part of it is the discernment, right? You come with prayer, you come with a group from your church that can help you make these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
You begin to look outward and say, who is God calling us to serve? What does this neighborhood need? Who is God calling us to be in this instance? Because there is a range of how a church can be involved, right? You see churches that have developed themselves, are running their building, but then you have churches that had somebody else develop their building, but then they're running it mm-hmm. and managing it. So it just, there's a lot of what ifs in it, and it's just going along the discernment path and asking these questions until you find that right fit and where you feel like, okay, this feels right. We're comfortable with this.
Mm-hmm.
So
in the webinar, mm-hmm. and we'll have to put a link for the webinar in the show notes because mm-hmm. you recorded, right?
I did.
Okay, perfect.
Can I say something about that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so this is so cool. Well, I think it's cool. I don't know if you will, but so my husband was helping me because he's an IT guy, and it was kind of my first big webinar,
mm-hmm.
and he forgot to press record right away. But the part that he pressed record on, it was when Mark Elston said, right at the moment, Mark said, God is not in decline.
Hmm.
And I was just like, that was a message for me.
Yeah.
Because when we talk about the housing crisis,
right,
sometimes it feels so big.
Yeah.
And it feels like, Lord, can we even do anything about this? And so I almost felt like, hey, maybe God was giving us a message right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'll hear it, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's give some examples. Mm-hmm. So I think that was interesting for me just in the webinar, just to see, like, and hear. Mm-hmm. So give, like, three or four examples mm-hmm. like that you gave from the webinar, for instance, like, what are churches are doing? Because I was surprised to see, like, the kind of vast array of what different churches are doing.
Yeah. So Lutheran Church of Hope in Broomfield, Anchor House, they're servicing former foster youth, and they actually took on the management piece of that.
Okay.
And also in the resources that I send from the webinar, it has links to their story, and it's just beautiful. Made me cry. Solid Rock in Colorado Springs, Pastor Ben did a LIHTC deal. Augustana Lutheran, they're doing affordable home ownership. Agape was on the webinar.
Okay.
They did permanent supportive housing for those coming out of incarceration.
Is that the what's that?
Agape Church, Charity House.
Charity House. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Yep. And then Heart of the Rockies, you had Pastor Melissa St. Clair on there, in Fort Collins. And I have a ongoing list mm-hmm. of that, but, watching the webinar will give you a little more details on that.
Yeah, this is good. This is good.
Mm-hmm.
So, from my own curiosity, and hopefully this will be relevant to our listeners, like, I'm thinking about, like, what does it involve as far as the land? The nitty gritty of, like, the land. Is it, like, I've heard a lot about, like, 99-year leases type thing.
Totally.
is it transferring land, which I imagine, obviously it sounds like for the one Lutheran church, like it sounds like they have control still over everything.
Yeah. And a lot of it comes down to denominational governance and what they all allow you to do. So you do see some land leases. You see some churches maybe selling a portion of the land to help leverage building on another portion.
Okay.
You see
help with the financing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. You see some cases where the land is donated if, you know, you see some cases where the church decides to develop themselves.
Okay.
You see a co-partnership. It just depends on what the finances of the church, how much risk the church is willing to take on.
Yeah.
How much capacity, right, they have to enter into some kind of development. And yeah, it just becomes a point of negotiation, really. What we do is, well, what we've done in the past is we write a request for proposals based on what the church needs, what the church wants, and we send that out to Mission and Align developers.
Okay.
And then the church can, you know, kind of see what's on the table for them, and they begin to negotiate what's best for them.
Hmm. Okay. So I'm curious, are these always like instances where it's like low income AMI area median income type housing, or like are there situations where it's like a church is like, hey, like we want to just develop our land to have like some kind of revenue stream? Like, is that even a possibility?
I think that is totally a possibility. And I think something else, even though what we're focused on, you know,
right,
I think it's not a either or, it could be an and.
Sure.
And
like they could do half
to offset whatever they need.
Right.
I think that could be a possibility. When you're thinking about affordable housing though, cap, you know, you're thinking the 0 to 80% AMI.
Right.
That's area where most kind of, yeah, area median. That's where most of the funding is gonna be coming from. So if you're thinking something beyond that.
Yeah.
You're going to have to either come with that funding. Or fund, you know,
Let's talk about funding here.
Yeah.
Because you used the, LIHI or?
The LIHTC.
Low Income Housing Tax Credit, right? So I'm just learning about that a little bit myself and in my context of work. Share a little bit about that for our listeners and how that
works. So tax credits are given for affordable housing. It's pretty, it's an application.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people apply.
Yeah.
And so usually you have to have some type of experience to, you know, apply or go in with somebody that has the experience. Doing this deal, Clara Brown Commons, we had a lot of help with very experienced developers, very experienced consultants. But yeah. It's an application through CHAFA.
And just again for context, like the company that I work for, a housing authority, like put in an application for one of these low income housing tax credits and didn't get it.
Yeah.
Like there's only so much money in the pot to go around.
And right. And it does cost to put in the application. So
right.
It's gonna cost you something.
So now in my work context, the housing authority does have a loan to basically for some chunk of the money.
They have equity they're bringing.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So how much equity does a church need to have?
Again, that is going to depend on what they're building and what they want to do. I mean,
so if you're building like we're in right now, 60 some units, you're probably going to need to bring a good chunk of equity. But like with the Lutheran Church in Broomfield, that's
so I think the pre-development costs, if you like would do something on your own, could range from 50 to 100,000.
Okay.
But if you go through something like Abundant Ground, we help offset that because we're working with technical experts that have agreed to give the church a discount.
Yeah.
So I don't want the church to worry about that, but it's nothing. We just don't enter in, like, let's give you technical. Yeah, right. It's not willy-nilly, like, for
you want
sure.
Some discernment and
right.
Prayer.
Right, because we're putting a lot of skin in the game right. for it. And right. We want you to have some skin in the game right. as well. Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of, I feel like there's so many questions here. What's like, I don't want to get like worst case scenario, but like, what are some like, where would you advise against the church doing this? I can imagine, obviously, you know, if a church is, like we said, willy-nilly, mm-hmm. haven't fully spent some time in prayer,
no.
don't have buy-in from the congregation mm-hmm. yeah. leadership. What are some other like,
yeah,
hey, like, we appreciate your heart,
yeah.
but this is not going to work.
I think if they're in a real financial crisis themselves, yeah. like, we don't want them to make a decision based out of kind of fear.
Yeah.
So that we would advise against that. And we see that happen mostly when churches have waited too long
yeah.
to get some kind of counsel around this. Yeah. And, you know, there have been times where we might say, you know, it just might be better to sell and pay off your debt.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be like the last option if we could, right. you know. Oh, and something else I didn't.
Yeah.
So churches are doing social enterprise out yeah. of there. You know, there were churches that I have talked to that they're doing affordable housing and like these small business startups, which is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So they're doing like a housing project on the land, and then they're using some of their existing space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's really a lot of.
There's so many options, and that's why I think discernment is also about creativity mm-hmm. and looking at the needs of your community and what is your community asking you for. And, you know, is there, you know, a lot of churches are helping with ECE, food deserts,
yeah, early like childhood education. Yeah,
grocery store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I mean, like, I did an MBA mm-hmm. a couple years ago, and like one of the first projects I had to do was like a big research report.
Mm-hmm.
And like, obviously, like, my data wasn't scientific per se, for instance, because, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of be like, hey, fill out my survey about how much you need early childhood support. But like, you think about the costs, I mean, from my recollection, like, the biggest drivers of costs are going to be overhead and staffing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you obviously can't control staffing, like,
mm-hmm.
people cost what they cost, you know, you got to have the ratios, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, with the church, you can control overhead
mm-hmm.
you're not paying rent necessarily, or if you are, like, however that's arranged, that can be severely discounted, I imagine, for a church.
Exactly. And it's about partnerships, like
right.
if you look at our list out here of the people we partnered with, because you can't do this alone,
right?
And so something that I feel like is a theme that I'm seeing is like this idea of intersectionality and partnership. How
yeah.
can you partner with the government, or how can you partner with somebody that is an expert at running an ECE or mm-hmm. running a business? So the church doesn't have to necessarily be an expert at it. They just have to be willing to ask the right questions and willing to open up to partnerships.
Let's go down this. So you work doing this work.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about before we started recording, you know, it sounds like you come from a non-denominational background, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I come primarily from mainline Protestant world,
mm-hmm.
very denominational.
Mm-hmm.
These kind of denominations can be very siloed.
Mm.
If you've seen that, I don't know if you've seen mm-hmm. that. So how do you, maybe what are some examples you've seen? And then, you know, can you give some kind of like gumption, maybe, I don't know what needs to be said, but like, to get outside kind of your like bubble and encourage people to say, hey, this, you might need to look beyond like your own.
Yeah.
Circles, you know?
No, that is interesting, because being in this work, I am out all the time. Right. I'm seeing who's doing what, beautiful work everywhere.
Right.
And I recently went to a church, and this pastor is considering like kind of social enterprise stuff
mm-hmm.
and kind of a healthy, thriving church. And I said, well, what are the needs of your community? And he really couldn't answer that.
Hmm.
And so that was kind of interesting to me.
Yeah.
But that's something that we can help you with, because part of this, like Jeff Johnson, our executive director, he had to do community engagement. That's part of the requirement. And city council actually, or maybe it was planning board, I can't remember, just gave him kudos around his community engagement, his planning, how he was, you know, getting the input from neighbors. And so we help churches with that as well.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that goes back to, again, the importance of really like laying the groundwork in prayer and discernment and leadership. Cause like, it's not just going to be like the pastor or a couple people being like, oh, we should go after like, let's talk to a developer and tomorrow. Right.
Right. For sure. You need a team around you. You need, a little bit of capacity in terms of time and energy that you're going to put into this, because it takes some thought. We help you. We help guide you, but you're going to have to make time for meetings with us and to go through your options and talk about some of those technical
things. Let's talk about time then.
Yeah.
Like, what should a church think about? Like,
yeah. So I'll give you the actual building here. Took about a year to build.
Right.
But to get permits and everything else, you know, I think we're looking more at two to three years. Mm-hmm. But then you add on this discernment piece, like we've seen, you know, 5 to 6 years.
Right. Frankly, I think that's pretty quick, right?
So and we've seen even longer. So it just depends on, and we're never about rushing the church or putting any kind of pressure on the church. Because we want God to lead them. But yeah, a lot of that time is the discernment piece and getting everyone on board.
I mean, because even if we go back to Heart of the Rockies, right? I mean, they first got interested, I think, if I'm remembering back in like 05, 06, maybe
2018, I think, because I actually went up there when I was part of the Congregation Land campaign.
And so this current iteration, maybe.
Yeah. And then they, so I think, but they could have been talking about it even before then.
Right. I think.
Then they're breaking ground now.
I think they had a different idea about, but that's a good point about a good framework for listeners. Like think about 2018, 2019. So here, but February 2024, as we're recording this, like
six years.
Yeah. And what? It'll probably be another year before it's done.
Yeah.
So it seems like 7 years is a good kind of mental concept, mental framework, I think, to think about, right? Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
Yeah.
So I can imagine, like, and this is one of the things I talked to Mark about, like, there may come a point where a church, they've got like 10 people left, it may be like, thank you for your, like, have you encountered such a situation where you go into a church and there's like 10, 15 people and it's obvious to you, like they're not going to have like the resources to do it themselves? Like, what do you think like is the best, most faithful
plan
of attack for them?
I have seen that. And because I don't want to put pressure, you know, I'm a little... Yeah, I think the one that I'm thinking of, they're just going to end up selling to the market.
Mm-hmm.
We might write an RFP to see if
he is
request for proposals to see if there any affordable housing developers might be willing to partner with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we, like we said before, if we wait, it puts us in a precarious spot that we maybe not, we don't make the best decisions.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine like me, like it seems like in the Denver metro, like any housing going up is probably a good thing, net good, right?
Yeah.
But if you're really passionate about like providing affordable housing.
Yeah, I think we do need to build for sure. We need to build across the spectrum. We need way more lower AMI units.
We don't need any more like multi-million dollar
homes, right? Okay. But there's also the policy piece around it. That I think is interesting. And Phil Burns from out in California talked about SB4 out there, that they did a religious overlay for churches that are going to build affordable housing so that they don't have to go through the rezoning process, which will save thousands of dollars and months of time. And so if we could get something like that, that would help, right? But I do think we need to, yes, housing in general, but especially for, I would even say 0 to 120% AMI, because what I'm seeing is like, yeah. I'm going into these churches. Yeah. The pastors have this land, and then at the end, they kind of come to me and say, hey, do you think I don't own a home? But they're like at 81% AMI. Right. And so they can't get into the affordable housing market, right. And they can't buy market rate. Yeah. So I think now, you know, we have the Middle Income Housing Authority. I'm wondering about that. I'm wondering how there might be a land trust that from 80 to 100% AMI. So I think it's all about creativity and getting the right minds in the room and just trying it. Let's see, would this work?
I'm glad you brought up the policy side, because I can imagine a scenario where a church might, you know, let's say like they got a tiny chunk of land, they got a building, you know, they can't really do anything. There's no land, real assets to do anything with, but they may want to advocate for. So obviously we're within Colorado, and that's probably what you're most familiar with. You mentioned California, though, for instance. But so what are some examples maybe that are happening locally, nationally, that churches could advocate for?
Yeah, I would really look into the SB4. We talk a little bit about that on the webinar. In the resources that I sent out for the webinar, I just have a ton of links about that. There's this whole conversation happening at the state level around zoning, and I think getting involved in that. I do have churches that, and that I haven't been able to focus too much on that, but they're like, we don't have land, but we care about housing.
Right.
So we're going to have an event on March 6th, going to be a learning lunch. And we're going to talk a little bit about some housing policy stuff that's happening here. And we're also going to talk to some faith-centered developers.
Okay.
And we're going to tour this beautiful building. So look out for that.
So now I'm like pressured. Is this going to release by March 6th? Okay, if you're listening to this and
before
March 6th, check this out. Where can they find out more about that?
If it's not,
well, we got
Mile High Ministries.
It's February 7th, so hopefully I'll get this turned around.
Oh, I'm sorry,
in time.
I just put pressure on you.
I know, but pressure on my editor though. So.
Oh, sorry, editor.
Yeah.
Yeah, go to Mile High Ministries, or you can email me. You have all my social media links and my email. But my email is jessicadominguez@milehighmin.org. And Dominguez with a Z.
Okay. Let me ask you this question before we take a break. And this is the question I asked Mark.
You know.
Like, what is like your nightmare scenario? Like,
oh my gosh.
I mean, like.
Yeah.
Like. I don't like, I can, when I'm in a not great mental framework, like I can you just think 10 years ahead and like, see, like, I don't want there to be another like marijuana church for listeners. There literally exists a marijuana church, and no judgment there, but I'd rather see better usage of church space. I frankly want there to be churches still existing. I also watch YouTubers who may not be religious themselves, and like they lament like historic churches getting torn down. So like, what is like, what do you see as like a worst case scenario? What's like your kind of dream and prayer scenario?
I think my worst case scenario goes back to teaching, because I taught for 23 years. I still teach part time. And I look at those little baby faces out there, and they don't know what's going on, but they're also housing insecure.
Yeah,
we have a lot of migrant students, newcomers, and you know, I've seen kids walking into tents, and I guess we're kind of at a nightmare situation. I've never seen that in Colorado, in Denver.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
And so, the only thing that could really make this nightmare worse is if God does not intervene, and he has to intervene through his church and through the body.
Yeah.
And we can't I can't do it alone. I need, you know, I need you. I need others that are feeling called to this mission. And yeah, I think to do other celebrations like this, right, that we had at Clara Brown, I wish you could have seen it. I mean, this building was just filled. We wrote this beautiful book and we celebrated with praise and worship. And I just, you know, I cried.
Yeah.
I just was like, man, God, thank you. You know, it was very difficult. There were times, I was actually on the board before I started working with Mile High. There were times where Jeff would come to the board and say, you know, he would tell us, hey, this came up, and it was a big problem, mm-hmm. and we'd have to wrap our brains around it. And every adversity we overcame.
Yeah.
Every adversity. And, this isn't going to be easy work. But we need to, let's go get it.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about, you know, something this past Sunday, mm-hmm. I was in church and the pastor spoke about Ezekiel and the dry bones.
Mm.
And I know that really resonated with me, just kind of where I'm at right now mm-hmm. in my life. You know, and I've been thinking about, I think it's Henry Nouwen, a quote about like hope. Christian hope is not like just some optimism about the future.
Mm.
It's this like hope of like what God has said, God will do, mm-hmm. God will do. And then like we look at stories, like that's to me why scripture is so important, because we can go back when we're feeling unhopeful.
Yes.
And go back and see like,
yes,
there's a story of God doing what.
Preach it, Lauren.
So.
And testimony.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was recently talking to a dear friend, Scott, and we talk about, you know, how just overwhelming we hear these stories of brokenness. And he said, Jessica, you have to have hope as resistance.
Yeah.
Because if you have no hope, oh my gosh, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
It's so tied in to faith.
Right.
And we need those, you know, that's another thing that I miss, that I don't really see so much in churches anymore, giving testimony.
Yeah.
And the power of testimony and the power.
Preach it. We're having a little revival in this office.
Come on. I mean, that story about Jeff going around this building for 20 years, that's a testimony.
Mm-hmm.
That's a testimony to God's faithfulness and to the endurance that he gives us as saints. And that can only be the work of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. You know, we're getting totally off course here, but this is fine. No, this is fine. This is what I love doing. But like, you know, I'm thinking like I grew up independent Baptist and independent Baptists we're very straight. You know, we're like lander than these white walls.
Yeah.
Right. But like that was a thing that would happen occasionally where there'd be like a song and testimony night.
Yeah.
And I imagine it was probably less rigid, right? In your context, there'd be some testimony.
Yeah, testimony. The pastor would stand up there and say, you know, does anybody have a testimony? And they'd go up and it was really moving.
Yeah. So, I mean, folks, go back and watch this webinar.
Yeah,
because in some ways, it's testimony.
It is.
To what people... the ways people have responded to God's leading in their in their church life, in their neighborhood, and what God has done.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. And stay tuned. More coming.
Yeah.
We have 4 learning lunches a year. We're going to start a discovery cohort, which will be 8 to 10 churches that kind of want to build their capacity around learning, affordable housing development. And we're going to be taking some field trips to different churches and
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, let's move on into our closing questions here. I usually do a break, but I'm scared to like break anything because
please. I'm okay. I don't need a break.
So closing questions. I always tell folks you can take these as seriously or not as you'd like to. And again, interpret them to your context. However you see best.
Okay.
So if you're Pope for a day, what do you want to do with that day?
Okay, so I've heard a lot of people talking and their answers are answering this question. They're so noble.
Right.
I'm going to take it on a little bit of a weird
tangent.
So I think I heard it on your podcast about Christianity Today did a section on our obsession with horror. Do you remember talking about that? So that led me down the little rabbit hole of listening to that podcast.
It's kind of freaky, wasn't it?
It was, which led me to The Exorcist Files and Father Martin, who is... it's actually fascinating because he brings a lot of science into it and mental health. But he also talks about scripture, and he's done this for 40 years. Mm-hmm. So if I was Pope for the day, I might attend their annual exorcism course.
Whoa.
Just, I'm curious.
Okay. Okay.
And I've gained a new respect. I didn't grow up Catholic at all. And I just really am intrigued by their doctrine and appreciate their
I'm yet to have a Catholic on the show, and I need to work on that because this is a very ecumenical podcast.
Maybe Father Martin.
Yeah. What's my next question? Because we're so haphazard today that I don't even have my notes.
I'm sorry. What theological...
Yes.
Yeah.
What's a theological figure you'd want to meet or bring back to life?
Okay, so I think I'm going to change that a little bit.
Yeah.
I would love to go back to the feeding of the 5,000.
Okay.
Because I felt like when they came to Jesus, right, the disciples, and said, these people are hungry. We should send them home.
Right.
And Jesus says, no, you feed them.
Yeah.
I felt like that was the moment when I talked earlier in the podcast when God was telling me, what are you going to do about affordable housing? And I feel like God is asking us to enter in.
Yeah.
And it seems so vast and so big that we're like, I don't think we can do this. Let's just send everybody home. But God is saying, well, what do you
have? Someone else's problem.
Somebody else's problem. Yeah. And the question we should be asking is like, what do we have? And that collectively, we bring our resources together, and collectively we bring that knowledge together, and collectively we work, you know, with government and other nonprofits, and we're able to create something beautiful and have abundance.
Yeah. I want to share so much about that story, but let's keep going. What's my next question?
I don't know. I feel like we've kind of answered.
Well, let's say this. What do you hope for the future of Christianity?
Yeah, I think I would hope that we would just take this moment of time, this crisis, and somehow turn it around, right? Into something praiseworthy and into something good for people. And good for the community, that when people look back at this time in history, you know, we've done something like when we built hospitals or built schools or we don't run from the crisis, but we, you know.
Yeah, that's a good example, because certainly we could think back, like there's so many hospitals across the United States came from a religious tradition.
Yeah, and scriptural in there, right? Yeah. Right.
Well, share how people can, you've kind of already done it, but share again how people can connect with you and learn more about Mile High Ministries.
Sure. They can go to abundantground.com. They can email me at jessicadominguez@milehighmin.org. They can look for the links at the bottom of this podcast. And yeah, I'm happy just to have a real informal chat with you and let you learn more.
Great. Well, thanks so much for hanging with me. This has been an adventure this afternoon, but we got it. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, always leave folks with the word of peace. So we're going to do peace, pass the peace in person. May God's peace be with you.
And also with you.
Thanks for joining us on the Future Christian Podcast. To learn more about Lauren or the podcast, visit future-christian.com. One more thing before you go. Do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast. And if you're feeling especially generous, leave a review. It really helps us get the word out to more people about the podcast. The Future Christian Podcast is a production of Torn Curtain Arts and Resonate Media. Our episodes were mixed by Danny Burton, and the production support is provided by Paul Romig-Levitt. Thanks, and go in peace.